Welcome to Amici, news and insight from the New York Judiciary and the Unified Court System. I'm John Carr. On today's program, we have two guests, Administrative Judge for the 9th Judicial District, Kathy E. Davidson of Westchester County, and Kristen Conklin, Executive Director of the New York State Commission on Justice for Children. They're here to discuss a novel specialty court, the Gender Responsive Initiative and Partnership, or GRIP Court. The GRIP Court is a gender and trauma responsive court that was launched last October after 3 years of study and work. It was created in response to data suggesting that girls designated juvenile delinquents or persons in need of supervision seem to be treated differently than boys. Its mission is to, quote, promote healing and provide opportunities, justice, and supports that improve outcomes for girls, in particular for girls of color, who are at risk or involved in the juvenile justice system. Judge Davidson, I believe you spearheaded this initiative. What problem did you identify, and how did you identify it?
Well, first, I'm working with the commission, so it wasn't me just spearheading it. But it was really over a period of time seeing the girls come into the court, and obviously at that time it wasn't just a girls' court. This saw seemed to be a trend in terms of the behaviors of the girls. And not sufficient tools as a judge to address the issue that brought them before the court.
Okay. Now, what is the data showing, and what are the issues? Kristen, do you want to take that?
Sure. PINS petitions are filed for girls and boys, generally by a parent or guardian, about 90% of the time. In Westchester County, girls have a slightly higher number of PINS petitions relative to girls across the United States. And PINS petitions are significantly more likely to be filed for girls when they are, quote unquote, not where they're supposed to be, such as at home or at school, or when there's a concern for their personal safety. In contrast, PINS petitions are significantly more likely to be filed for boys when they engage in aggression, violence towards others, or represent a threat to public safety. And I should say that this research was conducted by our research partners at NYU, particularly by Dr. Shabnam Javdani, who's an associate professor of applied psychology at NYU. With regard to juvenile delinquency petitions, looking at the Westchester County numbers, girls represent a lower proportion of JD petitions compared to boys. However, they are overwhelmingly likely to receive a new JD petition when they are in residential facilities. Mm. There's essentially a 1 in 2 or a 50% chance that girls will get a new JD petition when in residential facilities, compared to about a 1 in 8 chance if you are a boy. The reasons for the JD filings also differ for boys and girls, with new girls JDs filed almost always for simple assaults, and boys new JDs involving a variety of more severe offenses, such as aggravated assaults and sex-related offenses.
So the data is different for girls than it is for boys. Is
correct.
Is it different for girls of color?
So on the national level, yes, girls of color are overwhelmingly represented in all processing points of the juvenile legal system and particularly likely to receive confinement. A New York City-based study conducted by Dr. Javdani found that less than 1% of referred girls are white. Locally in Westchester County, we cannot fully account by race because the data are not systemically reported in the petitions. However, I think Judge Davidson will tell you in her experience, girls of color are disproportionately represented in the justice system, in the juvenile justice system in Westchester County. I will say that there is a recommendation that we're going to make going forward that to ensure a child's race information is systemically collected and accessible in order to look for racial disparities on going forward.
So the data shows that there's a disparity, and maybe this is a question that we don't have the answer to yet, but why is there a disparity? Do we know the answer to that?
Well, we do know that girls fare worse in residential placement compared to boys. The statistics that we just talked about, the 1 in 2 versus 1 in 8, and the Westchester County data. And nationally, there's a handful of residential models that support gender responsive and trauma informed care in which girls can do well. The models all have essential ingredients, including staff training from leadership to frontline staff support, accountability and incentives for engaging in best practices, and also access to gender responsive programming within the residential placements.
So
Okay, now Judge, tell me about the GRIP court. What's the purpose? What's the aim? What are you trying to achieve?
Sure. So let me just go back to one thing. I think you asked the question, why do we think it's mostly girls of color that we see in the court? I think that's a trend. It's the same problem we have when the school do pipeline in prison, that the issues that bring girls of color before them is used behavioral. And so I think it's not something that's just by chance. It's a systematic institutionalized racism, or the looking at girls of color differently in terms of assessing why they're going to be called to the principal's office, why they're targeted. I think the need for the GRIP court, which is gender responsive intervention partnership, is because we realize that in order to address the issues of girls of color, you have to have a court that's sensitive, that probably what's brought this young girl before the court may not be the same for another girl. And additionally, we've started to look at the girls from a holistic perspective, which means that usually it's not just the girl in terms of whoever's before the court. There usually tends to be some issue specifically with the family, parents, or whoever the caretakers. So we felt that in order to address the needs of the girls, in order to prevent them from coming back into the system at a very critical point in their life, we have to approach the girls differently. And that's why you need a partnership, which is what we have with the GRIP court, the stakeholders, to address these specific issues.
So what goes on that's different? Is the proceeding any different, or just the participants a little bit different?
I think a lot that goes on different. It's still the court case, so we're not, you know, a social service agency. We look at the case differently. We call it a dispositional court. So clearly there is some behavior that brings that particular young girl before the court, and we address it like we would address any other juvenile delinquency case, whether it's by way of an admission to an act which would constitute a crime, or by fact-finding. It's at the dispositional phase that we look at it differently and begin to really drill down with all of our stakeholders. So our stakeholders, in terms of creating the court, you're going to have your presentment agency, your attorney for the child, you're going to have your probation department, you're going to have social workers, and we look to include education consultants to really diagnose and say, what's really going on in this young girl's life that we hope by this intervention at the end of the day can in fact allow her to go on to be a productive person and confident and self-confident within herself, which may look differently in each different case. So that's where the court takes on a different track from once the case becomes before the court.
Does a GRIP court judge have any specialized training or knowledge or expertise in this area?
Well, you always want, well, clearly the GRIP court, the first thing is that you want a GRIP court judge to be a judge that wants to do this. I was speaking with another administrative judge, and she said this is the type of court that has to be somebody, a judge who wants to do this, because it is going above and beyond. So, but we hope they would have special training from the understanding that they would understand the trauma, the effect of trauma, the family dynamics. So the special training is training and understanding, and I don't have to name the list of courses, but they should be trained to understand what are the needs of specifically the type of young girls that we usually see, or bring in the professionals who can talk about those needs.
Okay. Kristen, I understand the Westchester Initiative is the first of its kind in New York State, but have courts in other states done this sort of thing?
A handful of other states have done so, beginning with Hawaii,
which
began a little over a decade ago. I believe there's also a court in California and a couple of other states. Few of these courts have been evaluated, though, so it's unclear how well they work, quote-unquote, or what might make them sustainable. So key features of sustainable versions of these courts involve ensuring access to resources, including basic needs like family housing assistance, gender-responsive programming that centers the girls' self-determined goals, and an explicit emphasis on eventually reducing the reach of the court in the girls' lives. We feel that the evaluation part of what we're doing here in New York is going to help lay the groundwork for future courts.
Okay. Judge, I realize there's less than a year of experience running the GRIP court, but what's been achieved? And have you had to change your perception on what constitutes a successful outcome?
Well, I think with the successful outcome that we've seen thus far over about 6 to 8 months is, first of all, we really see a change in the girls from the initial time they come into court to we get to this phase. We begin to see girls be within themselves based on establishing a relationship with the court, a relationship with the attorney for a child, a relationship with the court officer. Everyone plays a huge role in this, that they begin to see that there are people, adults, that are coming into their lives who care about the ultimate result of what happens to them. So those are beginning to see just who that young person was when they came into court and who that young person is as they move on to, you know, whatever phase we determine in disposition. So that's the positive. But then also comes the realization, as I said previously, success looks different in each case. So we don't set success as, oh, we've come into the grip court, and next thing we know, they're going to be going to college, and then, you know, they'll be a doctor in 8 years. It's not that. How do we build the confidence and allow these girls to understand they've been heard and create that there are trusting adults who believe in their desires to become something more than what maybe they think they're being perceived as when they enter the court?
Okay. Kristen, are there any plans to expand GRIP?
Based on Westchester's experience, we believe that we should. In fact, as one GRIP court team member said, we have actually a responsibility to do this work. We're hoping that our conference at the end of the month on July 31st at NYU is an opportunity to get the word out and get more people interested in starting a GRIP court in their jurisdiction.
Great. Judge, Kristen, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Amici. You find all of our recent podcasts on the court system's website at www.nycourts.gov. And most are also in the iTunes podcast library. If you have a suggestion for an Amici podcast, please let me know. I'm John Carr, and I can be reached at 518-453-8669 or jcaher@nycourts.gov. In the meantime, stay tuned.